This podcast is part of the Game and Entertainment Network. Visit tgenetwork.net to find the latest episodes from all our shows.
It's time for AgriChat, the official podcast of the Tales of the Agronaut blog and stalwart gaming community, where we talk about stuff and things, and the stuff about the things, and sometimes gaming. I'm Belgast, and let's start the show. Hey folks, it's that time again, time for another episode of AgriChat. This is episode 180. Tonight, I'm joined by Ashgar.
Hello.
Grace.
Hey, yeah.
Kodra.
Hi-yo.
Tam.
Do I come up with something weird to say hi with? Anyway, hey.
I don't know. And Thalen.
Hello.
So, tonight, we are doing something through the magic of broadcast media and skipping and switching shows. And we're doing our Destiny 2 podcast, which was retroactively the game of October?
Yes, the second half of it, at least.
Surprise!
We talked a little bit about this last week, but we needed more time with Divinity Original Sin 2, so we're flip-flopping things and recording our Destiny 2 show because most everybody was ready.
Destiny 2 was going to be the game of the month for November anyway.
Right, so things happened. And I have played an excessive amount of Destiny 2. How much has everybody else played?
I have played more than you have.
On PC?
Well, yes. On PC, I have played more Destiny 2 than Belle has.
I've played a lot, but not quite as much as you guys.
I have not played that much.
I've got my main character, a hunter, pretty well maxed out for right now. And I'm working up a Titan.
So according to Time Wasted on Destiny, which is a real site, if you add PlayStation 2, I've been playing it on the PlayStation 2, PlayStation 4 and PC, it's about 180 hours.
I have played not as much as you guys, but I am almost done with the main story and I'm level 20.
Cool.
I'm almost done with the main story and I'm not level 20.
This is the thing. Like, I don't know, that was one of the weirdest things when people were leveling through originally on the console was, like, some people got to 20 way ahead of the story, and then I'm pretty sure Lyle, for example, like, got through the main story at level 15, and then had to level after he beat the game. I think it's all directly related to how much piddle time you're doing out in the zones.
It's quite likely. Yeah.
I did a lot of public quests.
If you're doing public quests, if you're doing adventures instead of zipping on to the next planet.
Mostly I was only doing the adventures that were worth upgrade points.
That's
what
I did.
When I got to Nessus, I had to do a whole lot of extra stuff because I needed it to be 11 to hit the story, to progress the story.
Yeah.
So for the uninitiated, Destiny 2 is probably a mislabeled game. It is really just a continuation of Destiny 1, for lack of a better term. Like, I feel like
the tech are all basically the same.
In some ways, I kind of feel
like it isn't really a bad thing, for the most part.
No.
Not really.
Nope.
Like, the mechanics were the thing that kept people playing the first game. Like, it's what hooked me early on and got me to play the some almost 500 hours that I played of Destiny 1.
So, I actually have to... I should probably weigh in, because I think I was the most down on Destiny 1 of anybody.
Probably.
I think so.
And I had, as anybody who's seen this, heard me rant on the podcast knows, I didn't like all of the mechanics in Destiny 1. And I mostly like all of the mechanics of Destiny 2. So there were some changes. Most notably, the addition of a class ability is a huge, huge game changer for me. Because it makes me feel like my choice of class is more meaningful, and also that I have more things to do other than just shoot my gun.
And those class abilities are, the Warlock drops a pool of energy at the bottom of their feet that can either heal or empower the target. Hunters get a dodge that either... I know one reloads, but I don't have a clue what the other one does.
The other refreshes their melee ability.
It's so good.
Yeah, either reload your current gun or refresh your melee ability.
Titans get to drop either a full wall that, you know, does a decent job of blocking incoming attacks, or a rally wall, which allows you to duck behind it and reload your weapon instantly. And these things are up pretty often.
Yeah.
Cooldown's about a minute.
I feel like my cooldowns are available enough that they're almost always around when I want them. Not always.
Grenade a lot more often.
Yeah, grenade is the thing I want more often.
So what I will say is the hunter dodge roll doesn't feel too big, except that on my class I can refresh it by using my melee attack by killing somebody with a melee.
I feel like the hunter dodge is not that big a deal, except for the fact where you can build your entire build around it, which is hilarious and awesome. That hunter build is so fun. In fact,
that's basically the punch hunter, isn't it?
You may remember that one of the things that I asked for from Destiny 1 that was, this is not a thing that Destiny 1 is doing, you can't do it, is I wanted to play a largely melee class. And they gave that to me in that hunter build.
All right, so what I really liked about this game is its intro, because this game finally had an intro where everything makes sense. Like, the action that's going on is explained well. Like, you understand the motivations of the villains, you understand the motivations of the heroes. It does basic functional storytelling in this game.
Yes.
And that was something that Destiny 1 sorely lacked.
Yeah.
And they do a good job either introducing or reintroducing the main NPCs, which Destiny basically didn't do at all.
It did not even a little bit.
Well, and like, the worst thing was they referred to them by a moniker, not their actual name.
Yeah. In Destiny,
which was even worse.
Up until, expansions, they were three dudes standing around a table who occasionally got a line when you talked to them to get some stuff. Here, they are, like, distinct personalities from the get-go. This is good.
Destiny 1 did not have time to tell you a story. It should have taken the time to tell you a story.
It didn't have time to tell you why it didn't have time to tell you a story.
I'm glad they realized that line was stupid and ridiculous and make fun of it in Destiny 2.
They do.
I also am glad that Cade 6 is there to be constantly hilarious.
Oh, man.
Yep. I love him.
I love Cade 6.
I might be the only person who doesn't love Cade 6.
In the world.
I think he has good lines. He has great writing, but he's super atonal. And it's, I don't know. He doesn't do it for me because he's like, he seems incapable of taking anything at all seriously. Even in a game where other funny characters do take things seriously.
I mean, every so often there's a moment where like he delivers a line and in a serious manner, and like it's extra meaningful because this is Cade 6 saying this. Like
I just finished up
the first chunk of I just finished up the entire story portion on Nessus. And so, at the very end of that, he's talking about Zaval and Ikora and finds out that Ikora is missing. And like, that's the moment that he's not joking at all. But yeah, it's very, very rare.
I mean, he also does like an actual 180 when he realizes that Zavala asked for him.
Yes. Yes. Because up until that point, he's all, I'm going to take care of this by myself. I'm going to, I'm just going to go in and handle this thing. Despite the fact that this is a terrible, terrible idea that would result in the destruction of the entire solar system. In his defense, he didn't know that until we came to tell him that. But
I really
then,
love the concept that, like, Zavala and Cade and Ikora are a fire team.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, such a good touch. Like, feel like, at this point, that they're not just three dudes standing around a table, that they're actual people who have history with each other.
Yeah, they stand around that table because they've got a history. Yeah, they've got history.
They are the leaders of, their respective classes for a reason.
And that part I do like, and I will say that I feel like the game's characters would be diminished without Cade, because it's... Cade allows Ikora to be hilarious. Like, Ikora has some incredibly funny lines, basically rely on her giving absolutely no fucks about being mean to Cade.
Yeah. I also very much like that, like, the majority of the story is predominantly about tracking down and restoring hope to each of these three people whose hope has been just completely and utterly stamped out.
I mean, it has a very good get the band back together feel to it.
Yeah. So, like, I felt incredibly sad for Zavala, like, when you're initially flying into Titan, and he's just like, no, this was a terrible mistake. I've fucked everything up. Run now while you can.
Well, and they give you a good enough sense of who the band is to care about getting them back together.
Even if you did not play Destiny 1, they give you some idea of what they're like in the intro.
Yeah. You get to see them each do their thing.
It's been really interesting playing this on the PC and on the console, because on the console, it essentially imported my character from Destiny 1. And as a result, it treated the fact that, oh, I've beat all these things. I know this stuff. And I got completely different dialogue than I did on the PC. So it's been weird to hear the way that they introduced the characters that the console version, for example, for me personally, just knew I knew already. Like, mostly it came in when they were introducing the various NPC types or you know, races, instead of giving me an example of, oh, this is what they do, it would remind me of a time that we fought them in the past.
So this is my complaint about this game, is it does such a good job of setting up the Red Legion in the intro and letting me know why I want to kill them, and then immediately after the intro, I'm dropped into fighting the Fallen without any really good explanation for why I'm killing these people.
Yeah. I feel like the Fallen are the least well-explained enemies of the entire game. And, like, are kind of pitiful.
Oh, they're very pitiful.
And, like, we just kill them? I don't know. We're giant bullies.
Yeah, I have very specific feelings about this, but my feelings come from playing the other game. So I get what you're saying.
Right.
Because without the other point of reference of, oh, no. Fallen are horrible when they get organized.
Yeah.
Like, they're the worst when they get organized. Because, like, right now we're fighting a group called the House of Dusk, which is kind of materialized out of the remnants of House of Kings, House of Wolves. God, I forget all the names of the fallen houses.
House of basically Winter, like, I think, was one.
House of Winter was one, yeah. So basically we're fighting this group that is reorganizing. And at the state at which we're fighting them in the EDZ, they're very much not organized. Like, they're starving for ether, they are pitiful. But man, when they get ether fed, they are horrible things. Especially when they, you know, dip into the SIVA pool.
Yeah. Yeah, they were responsible for some very bad stuff in the first game.
I mean, like, so the Cabal was responsible for the city falling, but the Fallen were the race that came closest to taking down the city before.
I like that they decided to use the Cabal as the main villain, at least for the initial story, because I felt like in the first game they were the villain, the enemy class that got the least development. They didn't really feel that interesting.
They just sort of show up on Mars.
They're just, oh, here are some Space Marine dudes.
Yeah. But I also feel like they could / should have taken the time in this game to explain why the Fallen are, like, there's the one line I got was, they're the Fallen, they're scavengers who worship machines. And that's 100% of the background I had.
Yeah.
Whereas if there had been a line that had been like, oh no, Fallen this close, that's really bad. The Fallen are scattered now, but this means they're reorganizing. It's like, okay.
Yeah, just like a little bit of stuff, you know, basically related to everything that happened with SIVA.
Yeah. Like, I can follow that one.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I have a dissenting opinion. I mean, I sort of knew who the Fallen were from the first game, but I'll be honest, I didn't pay any attention to any of the story in the first game, so whatever. Like, I knew that they were bad guys, but the fact that they're basically, the theme was just, oh, it's the Fallen, they're a bunch of scavengers, and they're going to keep coming in here and taking our shit. Can we please get rid of them? Like, that was good enough for me. Like, that was coherent and it made sense. And when you did, you know, I guess maybe not in the main story, but if you did any of the side quests on Earth, there's basically like, oh, they're coming in and stealing our stuff again. We have to go get it back. Can we please get rid of these guys?
Yeah.
I mean, and they kind of harass, like, the citizens of the EDZ.
Yeah, I guess it's, I guess that's just my question. Mike, it's like, I understand why there's no diplomacy with the Cabal and the Hive and the Taken, but I don't understand why there's no diplomacy with the Fallen, especially when they don't seem to be, like, other than stealing stuff, they don't seem to actually have a, like, what they eat is not what we eat, so there's not a big difference in resources.
Because we're playing an FPS.
Yeah, but...
yeah.
Sure, but, like, that's insufficient for me. That is an insufficient reason for me to wantonly murder lots of people, which was my problem with the first one.
I mean, and I guess maybe, like, it feels like that was maybe an overlooked thing, just simply because there is sufficient reason to say this is why we don't want the Fallen to reorganize, but they just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And they didn't really talk about much the fact that, like, the Fallen were the original chosen of the Traveler, or one of the last chosen of the Traveler before the Traveler came to Earth.
See, knowing that actually makes me feel even worse about it.
I mean, that's a big reason, part of why they're hostile towards us.
Yeah, but it sounds like they've got a decent reason.
Well, I mean,
if, like,
it's not our
they
fault.
They did something to make it leave.
Yeah, but sure, and now they're constantly starving to death. I don't know. I feel bad for the Fallen.
I feel bad for the dregs. Like, I don't feel bad for, like, the captains. I mean, because functionally, like, they're starving the dregs. I mean, Fallen functionally grow as big as the ether that they're given.
Yeah, they're like goldfish.
I mean, like, I shit you not. That's the lore of the Fallen. Like, the captains eat most of the ether. Then they, you know, leave a little bit for their vandals, which eat a little bit more. And then the dregs, like, get next to nothing, just barely what it takes to survive, because they want to keep them weak and, you know, subservient. So, like, that doesn't exactly give me warm fuzzies about, you know, cooperating with the Fallen.
Obviously, we need to take out all the captains and liberate the dregs.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that.
I have so much glimmer. I'm not using all of this glimmer. I'll shoot a bunch of captains, liberate the dregs, and then we could have a standing army in the city. It'd be great.
I mean,
the space elves kind of sort of tried this.
I mean, there was an ally faction of the Fallen briefly.
Yeah.
Until there wasn't.
But all signs point towards them betraying us.
Yeah. Well, and in that case, yeah, sure. Like, all right, we tried diplomacy and it failed. Sure. We're done with that. But, like, let me know. Let me know that that's what happened.
So what's weird about that is
nothing at all about the reef has been mentioned or anything.
No. Like, I don't. Yes, there is. There's lots about the reef. The problem is it's in the game only accessible by scanning objects, and there's like 100 scannable objects in the EDZ, and they tell you little snippets of story about things like Uldred and the crows and Varix and the reef, and how all of the stuff, you know, that they find around the EDZ from the Fallen are marked with Varix's House of Kings mark. I think it's House of Kings that Varix was part of. But yeah, basically, like, everything points to the fact that Varix betrayed us, and also Uldred from the Reef betrayed us.
I love those little lore snippets from the scans, by the way.
I wish there was a journal, though,
yeah,
to where it collected them, because I don't know which ones I've scanned and which ones I haven't, but man, I've scanned a ton of them.
Baby yeah. steps forward, I guess.
Here's the problem is the Grimoire was not a good system because it was out of game, but I loved the Grimoire. Had they just put the Grimoire in game, that would have been a major step in the right direction.
It's true.
And I feel like these scannables are the new Grimoire, but they're once again still not in game. And, like, even more so, there's no other place they're at.
Well, they are in game.
Well, they're fleeting in game.
Yeah.
It's not like you're building a tapestry of a story that you can piece together. You just have to remember snippets in your mind. It's not like at the end of scanning, you know, 100 scannables, you're going to have a book to read like you did with the Books of Sorrow from the Grimoire cards. I may or may not be obsessive about Destiny, so just a heads up, folks. You've heard me talk about it over the course of a lot of different shows, so I may be a little obsessive about Destiny.
Do you feel like the guns feel different to you?
From what do you mean?
From Destiny 1 to Destiny 2?
I do, but part of it also is that they feel completely different between the PC version and the console version.
Interesting.
Like, there's massive difference between the way some of the guns handle on the PC versus how they handle on console, to the point where there are guns that just feel like complete garbage on the console that are extremely awesome on the PC.
Yeah, like, scout rifles don't feel great to me on the PC.
I feel like that's just a general problem. Scout rifles do not do as much damage as they probably should.
Yeah, it's one of my major disappointments because I love scout rifles, but they feel like, I don't know, they're super weak.
Huh. Interesting. I feel mostly fine about, not all scout rifles, but I feel mostly fine about scout rifles, but auto rifles feel overpowered.
See, auto rifles feel worse on the PC than they do on the console.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It's because of the aim assistance. Like, there's a lot of auto rifles that are amazing only because they have really high aim assist. Like, Uriel's Gift is a good weapon, but it is a god-tier weapon on the console because it has high-caliber rounds, which flinches targets, and also ridiculous aim assist.
Got it.
Like, you can headshot with that thing like it's going out of style, but you can't now on the PC. Like, you can if you can hold your mouse perfectly still on a target, but it's not helping you headshot it the way it is on the console.
Yeah.
And, like, another weapon that is just horrible on the console is Perseverance, which is a 720 RPM auto rifle. And it's not good on the console because it doesn't have much aim assist. But on the PC, where you're not relying on aim assist, it's really good. So it's weird the way the two different games play. Same game on two different platforms. So yeah, I guess the roundabout answer is yes, I feel like the guns do feel different in Destiny 2 than they do in Destiny 1.
Well, so speaking of aim assist, that's a question. Is anybody besides me playing with a controller?
Nope.
I am not.
I did during the beta, but I switched to mouse and keyboard since.
I switch back and forth.
Because I've tried a little with keyboard, and basically I keep trying to play Warframe.
I switched my keyboard around. Because I was also having that problem.
Whereas with the controller, you know, I've already learned Destiny 1 on the console, so I already have all that muscle memory, so.
I also don't feel like I have that problem as much because it's third person. It's first person, not third person. So I know I can't double jump and slide and stuff. I mean, I can, but there's no reason to do so. Like, there is no Warframe.
Yeah. Speaking of jumping, I have developed, and I haven't decided if this is Stockholm Syndrome or legitimately I like the Warlock jump better, but man, when I'm playing any other class, I keep trying to do stuff that I can do with the Warlock jump and just can't do it.
Man, I have friends that swear by the Warlock jump other than you, and I can't stand the Warlock jump. I've gotten to the point where I can do stuff with it, but I always feel like I'm at a detriment because it doesn't work the way it should to me.
This is how I feel about the Titan jump.
This is 100% how I feel about the Titan jump. I feel like I have nowhere near as much control on the Titan jump. Like, I use the strafe glide on the Titan jump, and it does not feel like I have enough control over it.
Oh, see, like, the thing with Titan jump is you have to turn it off and on.
I do that with the Warlock jump.
Yeah, I think I've already just about figured that out with the Titan jump.
I'm used to doing that with the Warlock jump.
Like, with the Warlock jump, I'm turning things off and on at the wrong times.
Hmm.
I think part of it, too, is, like, the Titan jump has much stronger forward momentum. So you kind of develop a muscle memory for, I am going this fast. Now if I turn my jump off, I will hit the spot that I'm trying to go because I will slowly decelerate as I go towards it.
Yeah, I definitely did die instantly on my Titan the first time I realized that I did not immediately drop to zero velocity when falling.
Titans have to obey the laws of physics just a little bit.
I was like, what is this? Why do I care about physics?
The problem that I have with the Warlock jump all the time is I'm trying to clear a gap, and I start going, and I sadly watch as my eye level drops below whatever I'm trying to hit.
All I know is that I played Warlock forever, and I heard everyone raving about how great Hunter's triple jump was. And I constantly die because I'm expecting that extra press is going to stop me from jumping. And instead, it's an extra jump and I am boned.
Yep.
Yeah, Hunter just works totally different. Like, it's not backwards. It's just a different world.
Yeah.
It's just regular old Double jump or triple jump.
Also completely different is the blink for classes that have that.
I hate blink.
Is horrible.
Like, I actually kind of like it. I've been playing around with it a bit on my warlock.
If I were better at it, I think I would be better at PvP, but all it does is get me killed.
The biggest problem I have is, like, I expect it to just be a lateral movement, but it's also lateral and up.
My problem is it doesn't go off when I press the button. It goes off, like, 3/4 of a second after I press the button.
That is definitely a thing.
As anybody who worked with me on ESO can attest, I have really strong opinions about snappy blinks.
Yeah, this game does not have a snappy blink.
It does. On the Warlock lightning thing.
Oh, yeah, that thing. The teleport storm trance.
Yeah, the teleport while ulting or whatever. That's really good. I did not realize that no other classes other than Warlock could aim and shoot while jumping. Like, while whatever your jump power is.
While going up, you mean?
Yeah. Like, you can't shoot while jetpacking on the Hunter, on the Titan, and there's not really an equivalent for the Hunter, but...
I mean, you can shoot while moving horizontally on the Titan.
If I like, aim and start shooting my gun, or just shoot my gun at all, my jetpack turns off on the Hunter, or on the Titan.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
One of the Warlock specs, you can aim while falling. Yeah. One of the Warlock specs does not do that, and it's amazing.
But it's one of these subclasses of one of the Warlock specs.
Yeah, that's fair. It feels super good.
See, that, I don't know, like, that bothers me because I'm just a target in the middle of the air.
You're still jumping along.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm moving so slow that anyone can track me with a gun super easy.
Depends on which Warlock jump you're using.
I don't know, man. I use the fast jump.
Yeah,
I love it when Warlocks take to the air in PvP because I can just wreck their shit before they land.
Oh, man. I get most of my kills as a Warlock in PvP while airborne. Granted, most of these are melee kills, but
I feel like the hardest jump to track is Hunter, since they can technically move. They can change trajectory every time they jump.
That's true.
But I feel like, I've said this before, I feel like the most significant difference between the classes is the way they jump.
I no longer feel like that's true, and I like that. I used to feel like that was true, but the different passives and the different grenades make a huge difference to me now. I like
different before. It just took you forever to unlock new grenades.
Yeah.
That's also true. The speed at which I unlock my class abilities is fantastic.
Also, after being initially a little annoyed by it, I do kind of like how class passives are organized into subclasses.
Yes.
Yeah, you just have one group of four or the other group of four, not like
30 yeah. choices of slightly different bar lengths.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it makes them as a complete set so that they build off each other, whereas they didn't before.
Yeah.
There was also, like, a lot of false choices in that there were certain abilities that you're always going to take no matter what. Like, it was just significantly better than the other things in the column.
Right.
And I don't feel like any of the paths are that way. Like, there's not one path that you have to play as. I mean, granted, there's one that I greatly favor in most cases, but the other path is doing something cool too. Now, the likelihood that I will ever not use the double grenade striker tree is pretty minimal.
Oh, I felt that way, and then I started using the other striker tree, and I love it.
Yeah, I've been using the other striker tree, which caps off with it. You keep on charging into things and killing them, and your ability to keep on charging into things stays up.
Yeah.
And it's
also
pretty great.
Every melee kill triggers health regen.
Yeah, that's the tree that I sometimes use on Sentinel. But man, double grenades is really nice, though.
Double grenades is really nice.
I mean, it's 100% of why I was wrecking those dogs last night.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely am a big fan of the melee tree, the melee focus tree in Arcstrider.
It's so fun.
I mean,
the punch everything.
If I play Arcstrider, that's the sub tree I'll play of it. But mostly, I don't like Arcstrider very much.
So, what do you play as mostly?
I play Nightstalker because I love my tether bow and my weakness grenades. I'm all about. I shoot some things at the dudes, and now everybody gets just crits upon crits on them.
I love having a Night Stalker around. They are so amazing when it comes to, like, burn phases. I feel like Night Stalker is kind of the Hemo Rogue of this game.
What?
They look, suffer
nobody
a bit
actually
of
played Hemo or that debuff ever.
Oh, Hemo Rogue.
Yeah,
Hemo I thought
Rogue.
You said Emo Rogue. I was like,
no, Hemo
that
Rogue.
That is a really weird.
I mean, like, they're sacrificing a little bit of personal damage to make everyone else do more damage.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like they are taking the thing that they are getting the thing that hunters otherwise don't have, which is a group contribution buff in some form.
The only subclass that I'm a little down on in general is Super Hammer Bros, because I used to love that, and I feel like it is nowhere near as strong as it was in Destiny 1 for the Sunbreaker Titan.
I was going to say, what Bella's talking about is the Sunbreaker Titan, and having just unlocked that and tried to love it, I agree.
Yeah, no, it doesn't feel as good as it used to. It was amazing.
I feel the same way, and I wish this weren't true, but I feel the same way about the Warlock Lightning spec. I want to love that spec so bad, but it's missing every tool I would need to like it, except for a really fun ult. It has an incredibly fun ult.
I really need to try that one again in Destiny 2, because it was my spec of choice in Destiny 1. But I've fallen so in love with having a giant flaming sword that I haven't really messed with anything else.
I hated that sword ult for a very long time. And I finally have come around to it. But
until you got the drop to the ground thing?
No. I don't actually use that spec anymore much. I like it, but it's not my favorite Sunbreaker spec or whatever, fire spec.
Dawnblade.
Sure. But I wish it lasted longer. Like, I just don't feel like I get value out of it unless I am using it for the sole purpose of unloading the entire thing on a mostly stationary boss.
So when I use it and it feels great.
It does feel good when I do that specific thing with it. But like, otherwise, I'm very disappointed in it. Whereas I feel like the lightning one is good at both of those things. On the other hand, the actual passives are so awesome on the fire trees.
I'm not a huge fan of Golden Gun, but I really like the knife throw.
It's the best. It's the reason why I use Golden Gun. Especially if you can knife juggle. That is just so great.
Yeah, I imagine knife juggle is really vicious on bosses.
What is that one?
If you land a precision hit, it resets your knife throw.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, as long as you can get precision hits, you keep having knives.
Yep. Now, I will say, though, here lately, I've started playing with explosive knife because it's like having a second slightly minor grenade.
I need to give the lightning melee, the like ranged lightning blast melee, a little bit more time on the warlock. Because mostly,
it's not actually that ranged.
It's not actually that ranged, and it deals less damage than my regular melee hit, or feels like it does. Which means that what happens is when I want to do a melee hit, I have to like spend some time doing some useless lightning thing and then actually doing the punching I wanted to do, which doesn't feel great.
So while I give warlocks a lot of hell, I will say, like, there's not a single class that I don't actually like. I mostly enjoy playing all of them for different reasons. And as of today, I got my second set of characters up in Destiny 2. Like, I had him on the PS4 for a while. I had one of each, and today I finished up the story on the Warlock and got its powerful Ingrams and all that wonderful stuff, which we haven't even talked about powerful Ingrams, but whatever. And there are lots of things I like about all of them. And I feel like that's really awesome that they have a design that there's something I can like about each of them. Because so often, like, when I play an MMO, for example, there are characters that I would never play ever. The only reason why I have a priest is because I boosted it, and the only reason why I have a mage is because I boosted it, because I got free boosts. I would never really ever play those classes. But, I mean, I am happy enough doing, like, even serious content as a warlock. I'm happy doing serious content as a hunter. Like, there's something I like that's going on with each of them.
Well, I mean, there's also the fact that they are all still shooting guns.
Yeah. And they can, in theory, all be shooting the same guns.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any explicit or de facto, like, this class uses this gun type.
There are a few exotics that encourage those sorts of things.
Yeah, like the shoulders that auto-load Titan auto rifles.
Yeah.
Or the boots that grant you increased accuracy and reload speed with hand cannons for hunters.
That's fair.
But any class can absolutely use any type of weapon and do just fine with it.
Yeah, like, I don't feel like there's something that... I don't feel like I'm making a mistake by not using a particular gun as a particular class. Like, a particular right. gun class as a particular class. Whereas there are definitely games I've played where that is absolutely the case.
Borderlands kind of comes to mind here.
Yeah, Borderlands is one of the ones I'm thinking of where, like, some classes are like, no, you're going to play with this kind of weapon.
And that was honestly what kept me from playing a lot of the different classes in Borderlands was because I like playing with a rifle. I like playing with, like, very specific types of weapons, and there were certain characters that just did not play with those.
Yeah. I mean, I like to play with close-range pistol and long-range might as well be a sniper rifle. And I can do that as all of these classes. I also feel like there is more variety or more accessible variety in weapons in Destiny 2 than in Destiny 1.
Both, because they extended the variety that used to exist only in legendaries all the way to down to greens.
Yeah, and that's really noticeable, and it's caused some really weird stuff to happen in the Crucible. because there are a couple of blue weapons that there is no purple for. And you will absolutely encounter those in the Crucible because, you know, everything is level scaled as though, you know, everyone is exactly the same gear level.
Yeah.
So using a blue doesn't matter at all.
I think that's really cool. And it means that I don't, even if it's a weapon type I normally wouldn't like, I frequently will use it if it's better than what I've got just because maybe I'll like it. There is a chance that I'll like it.
Well, the thing that I loved about it is, like, I became like, emotionally attached to weapons in this game. And while I was leveling, there were certain guns that I would encounter, and I'm like, oh man, this feels great. I really hope there's a legendary equivalent to it. And sure enough, there is. The name will be different, but it's like the same gun, just purple and scalable. So it let me really find the guns that I liked while leveling, and then try and find them, you know, once I hit the top. Now, some of those I haven't found yet, but hopefully at some point I will get the purple version. The so Yangtze, for example. Omelon
Foundry makes great stuff.
Omelon Foundry makes great stuff.
What is Better Devils from?
I am not sure. I'm thinking it's probably Haka, though.
Because
based on the design.
Those guns are awesome.
Yeah. Haka has a really weird showing in Destiny 2. Like, there were a lot of guns by that foundry that I liked in Destiny 1, but so far Antiope D is like the only one that I regularly use. And then maybe, I don't know for certain if Better Devils is Hawk or not. I wish they clearly stated what foundry guns were from.
I mean,
they do actually in their screen.
This must be an unknown foundry because there's nothing on Better Devils. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, there's no.
I guess they don't all, but some of them do.
Yeah, some of them do. But yeah, Better Devils weirdly does not. And it's one of my favorite weapons. And there's another one that looks just like it. Endless Midnight? Is that the name of it?
Nameless Midnight?
I don't know. Almost none of the gun names in this game make any sense at all, so I can never remember any of them.
Are you talking about
the scout rifle?
I'm talking about the scout rifle.
See, the thing is like, Tam and I have had this conversation before, and the fact that the names are so non sequitur is why I remember them.
Like, I can never remember them, but I think that they're great. Like, they're completely nonsensical, and I love it.
I just wish I ever knew what gun anybody was talking about ever, or could tell people what guns I like ever.
I still have trouble noticing enough of the difference between weapons to know what I like and don't like. Like, I have a sense of the archetype of weapon that I enjoy, and it ends up generally not feeling super powerful. So, like, the feel of weapon that I like a scout rifle, does not actually feel good to play because it doesn't seem to do the damage I think it ought to.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I did on console side is I had literally held on to every purple weapon I got a hold of. And then like one lazy Sunday afternoon, I'd pull out like one entire archetype at once. So let's pull out all the scout rifles and then go run around the EDZ and kill something with each of them to get a good feel of what I thought of each of these weapons. And then from there, I kind of was able to say, oh no, I like this one, but I don't like this one because, you know, it doesn't have enough impact or the recoil pattern is weird. But I kind of felt the same way with a lot of weapons where I wasn't quite sure which of these I liked until I did that. But that was super time consuming.
Yeah, I found scout rifles that I really just adore. And also I found scout rifles that are terrible and feel bad. And the latter,
I dislike all the full auto scout rifles.
Yes. I dislike all of the full auto scout rifles except for exactly one, which is Skybreaker's Oath.
Yeah. Yeah. But Skybreaker's Oath Skyburner's Oath.
Skyburner's Oath.
The only reason I know that is because Skyburners was the faction that you fought on the Dreadnought in Destiny 1 Taken King.
I'm just thinking it sounds like a pretty great Dawnblade weapon because, well, Guy and Burner.
What makes that one work, whereas the other auto scout rifles don't work, is Skyburner's Oath is a really high, hard-hitting archetype. And the Vyst-made auto scout rifles are, like, really low impact. So it feels like you're just kind of firing a crappy auto rifle.
That's the thing. Like, it does less damage than an auto rifle.
Yeah. And Skyburner's Oath does not. Skyburner's Oath does appreciable damage and also has a bunch of other benefits.
Not the least of which is shooting through phalanx shields.
Yeah, I mean, shooting through the phalanx shields is great. Staggering is great. Explosive shells are great. Like, it does a lot of stuff that I really like. But it is the only auto scout rifle I've found that I've liked. And I largely agree with Grace that most scout rifles don't feel like they do enough damage.
The thing is like, always in the past, I would have said I don't like scout rifles, because I definitely didn't in Destiny 1. But in each archetype, or I mean, not each archetype, but each type of weapon, there has been one or two outliers that I really liked. So I like Skyburner's Oath. I like Manananan, which is a nonsense, probably the king of nonsensical weapon names, but it's an Omalon scout rifle that reminds me a lot of the Hungjury from Destiny 1.
Is that the weapon's actual name? That's not a bellism?
No.
No.
M-A-N-A-N-N-A-N.
Wow.
Manamana.
Yeah, no, it's Manananan SR-4, I think. It's an amazing weapon. It's got explosive rounds, and it's a scout rifle. It's the same basic rate of fire as Mida, but the fact that it has explosive rounds immediately makes it better. For me, at least. Like, I really, really like explosive rounds.
Well, yeah. Everything rounds is better when you add explosions.
Yeah.
Explosions! Rounds,
that's why I like this Graviton Lance a whole bunch.
I also
despite
like
not generally liking pulse rifles.
Yeah, there's also, like, all of two pulse rifles I've found that I've liked, and the Graviton Lance is one of them. I do also like... I don't... It looks like a big bird.
Vigilance Wing?
Yes. Sure. I think
the five shot pulse rifle.
The five shot pulse rifle. That one is great. I like that one a lot. For similar reasons, it fires at about the number of shots that I would want from my auto rifle, and it hits really hard.
I think the weirdest thing about Destiny 2 so far is that exotics don't feel as epic as they did in Destiny 1.
See, I noticed a lot of returning ones have been nerfed somewhat heavily in some cases.
They were either nerfed heavily, like the
Sunbracers were super nerfed. They're still really good, but they were super nerfed.
And I think it's young Ahamkar's spine for hunters, whereas it used to just flat
in the same way.
It used to just flat give double grenades.
Sunbracer had the same thing going on, and now it doesn't.
Now it does something else, which is nowhere near as useful as double grenades. And the other ones that returned were, like, not really top-tier exotics from Destiny 1. So Like, some of the exotics are really good, but I also don't necessarily feel obligated to play with any of them.
From what you've told me about Destiny 1, I am so glad that I am not obligated to get a rare drop just to have fun.
I mean, Gjallarhorn was every bit as good as, you know, the legend. It was that good.
Yeah, like the, well, I mean, I remember being frustrated about the, all the, like, the guns not feeling significantly different and a bunch of other stuff. And, like, the comment that I always remember you telling me was, you need exotics. Exotics are where the fun lives. And I just never got one.
Yeah. I mean, and exotics did something, for the good ones at least, that was sufficiently different than anything else you could do. Like, so Red Death was a pulse rifle that anytime you got a kill, it immediately triggered your health regen. So it was like, it had this insane sustain going on. And by itself, the weapon was okay. It wasn't the best pulse rifle, but when you can start your health regen by getting a kill, hell yeah, that was a great weapon. Bad Juju was a weird pulse rifle that auto-reloaded itself on kills. And it also, like, massively amped up your super regeneration. So if for some reason you wanted to use your super all the time, you'd run it because it would get you more supers per strike or PvP match than any other option. So it's just weird getting adjusted to exotics being optional and not really being needed. Like, I can be just as happy not running any exotics right now.
Well, and funnily enough, for them being more optional, they drop a lot more often than they ever did in Destiny.
Yeah.
I mean, I can realistically get one a night. If I do stuff long enough, I will get an exotic. It's as though they built three of coins just in the game by default. That if you haven't seen an exotic in a while, chances are you're going to see an exotic.
I think
maybe they baked a few things like that. Like, they were kind of fixes and stop gaps in the original game. They baked them directly in this time around.
I mean, I don't know the math on it, but it feels a lot like the Diablo Legendary system where just playing long enough is going to get you one. Because it used to be like on the console, I would come home before I was caught up on trying to run three characters. I would do public events, and at some point during the evening, I always saw an exotic just off of a heroic public event chest. Now I seem to see way more legendaries, but I still see exotics pretty often, if I'm grinding, that is.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things that I really need to call out because I remember it from Destiny 1, I know how to progress. I know what things I can do that will guarantee me forward momentum. I do not have to just do whatever and hope that I get a drop.
Interestingly, knowing that there's a limited number of things per week that are guaranteed to be those big chunks of progress means that I don't care about running around and just playing as much, which feels weird, like, compared to the original game. I mean, I think I prefer it this way because I know that I can knock out those couple things, get my pieces for the week, and then play as much or little as I want to, but then it turns out that I end up playing less than I think I would otherwise.
I can see that. I mean, the story of me playing Destiny 1 was nothing drops for me ever. So, like, this puts me in a, this is a game I actually want to play because I can.
I have super mixed emotions about the progression system right now. I feel on one hand it's really good because it keeps people who are going to play the shit out of this game like me from just completely running away from more limited playtime folks without them ever having a chance of catching up. Or the answer to catch up being just go grind your face off for a while. And
hope.
Yeah, and hope. But it also feels really bad from the aspect of I played under the system where everything that dropped was either of my same level or there was a chance of it being slightly better. So I could win a war of attrition by slowly stair-stepping my power up. Whereas now everything that drops is basically fuel for the gunsmith. Because it's not actually going to help me out unless it was an exotic. And it's frustrating that that point begins as soon as it does. Like, there is a significant difference between 265 and 305. And you begin the fight at 265. Like, that's when you stop getting forward momentum other than the handful of milestones that reward powerful gear.
I mean, that having been said, 2 weeks in, less than 2 weeks in?
Yeah, less than 2 weeks in.
Less than 2 weeks in, my characters are hovering just shy of 290.
Yeah, and I was able to break 291 today on my Warlock, which is significantly faster than I got there on the PS4. But I'm also doing things like Nightfalls that I wasn't doing on the PS4.
Yeah.
So that's helping. I also feel like maybe they've been more generous with PC players. Like, I do not know how we are almost capped in our guild or our clan. And we will easily cap next week and hit rank 6. Whereas it took us more than a week, some weeks, to level on the console side. And the clans were effectively the same size. The only thing that I can think of is that maybe the PC players are playing just more than the console players were playing. I don't know.
Playing more alts?
Maybe.
I mean,
took me 3 weeks to have 3 characters through the story on the console. And now I'm just under 2 weeks and I have 3 characters through the story.
I also have 3 characters at max level, and one of them is on the last story mission. And in fact, we'll probably be finished with the story before we're done with this podcast.
P.S. I like the mechanic of getting to replay some of the story missions every week for fun and profit.
Yes, I think that's cool. Especially now that the story missions are good. Like, I like the story arc.
I do like the main story arc quite a bit.
I mean, I like the main story arc. I like the side quests. I could listen to Sloane and Holiday flirt all day because it's adorable and hilarious.
I take some issue with Failsafe.
Aww.
I love Failsafe.
Failsafe is pretty amazing.
But I
she
also
concerns me.
I also like the hilarious. Cheerful bad ideas characters, so I like cheerful bad ideas characters way more than Ash does.
If I could replace my ghost with Failsafe, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Or Crucible Announcer.
Yep. Crucible Announcer Failsafe would be amazing.
I feel like that should be a thing.
Crucible Announcer Failsafe would be so good.
So I know they have the tech for this, because when you play Iron Banner, it is no longer Shax doing the Crucible Announcement, it's Lord Saladin.
Yeah, I mean, so the tech is not difficult. It's play these voice lines instead of these voice lines on these triggers. You just have to record those voice lines. That's the expensive part. Well, write and record.
Man, so playing Iron Banner with Lord Saladin is hilarious because he plays off some of the things that Shax says. Like, at one point he says, "It's not over until Shax sings," and Shax is very shy.
I feel like Shax is your loud friend.
Yes.
Like, that is Shax's lot in life. I like Shax, and he's pretty funny, but also maybe he needs a hobby other than his job. He's just married to his job.
He's super hardcore, man.
Yeah. Although, I now want someone to do some fan art of Shax, like, angrily knitting.
I think the big thing for me is, like, I just like all of the characters now. There's really not a character that I just don't like. I mean, yeah, I know, Tam, you said you weren't that big of a fan of Cade 6, but
I'm not that big of a fan. I'm not that big of a fan of Cade, but I think he's a good character, and I like his dialogue a lot.
I mean, sure, Ashamir is a crotchety old man, but like, I would maybe be crotchety if, like, Vex took my arm and replaced it with a robot arm. Actually, no, that would be amazing.
A robot arm that's slowly eating you?
Nah, I'd be fine being a robot. It's cool.
Ashamir is another character who I like a lot, mostly because of other characters' interactions with him. Which, P.S., other thing I really like, the characters interact with one another.
Gasp.
I mean, most of the reason I like Failsafe is because I get to listen to my ghost. My ghost becomes the most put-upon AI ever, because that's just hilarious.
The best Ashamir sequence is when he's, like, wanting to show up Zavala, and Zavala will say, "No, Asher, I am an incompetent fool."
Like when he calls him Vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela.
Yes.
I unfortunately only can think of Vuvuzela when I think of that character, and I don't get his name right ever. because his name, much like, and there's like no rhyme or reason to naming that I can suss out. And so, long story short, I can never remember his name.
Zavala is now Vuvuzela, huh?
Yep.
Just the sequences like that play out in the background of your missions are just so great.
Oh yeah.
Like when Cade wants a tank.
I love the, so I've done the Nightfalls and I've run the Nightfalls repeatedly. And there are like 4 or 5 different series of conversations that are going on in the background per Nightfall. Like per strike that I've done, I've had sometimes completely different sets of characters talking their way through a strike that I'm in. I'm not even mad that the Nightfall has been the same strike 2 weeks in a row, and I've done it like 6 to 10 times because I get different dialogue, and some of that dialogue is great.
Like I like the dialogue of the public missions that changes yes. after you've done them enough.
When you've done them a bunch and they're like, yeah, you know what's up.
Yeah.
That servitor's back again. No, this is a totally different servitor.
I love, but yeah, almost every characters on every planet I like. I like Asher Mir. I love Hawthorne. Hawthorne is great. I also like Devrim. I love Devrim as the, I'm a perfectly normal dude who's just like along for the ride.
And I love the whole cloaks versus ponchos thing.
Yes. I love Hawthorne as a character. Like Hawthorne as a character who has kind of a dim view on Guardians. I like that.
I also kind of like the fact that like even after you've beat the story, her focus remains on something that's not exactly the same as the rest of the Vanguard.
Yeah.
She's all about your interactions with the community and other players.
Yeah. She doesn't put a whole lot of stock into this whole people being Guardians thing.
I'm really interested to see how their release schedule plays out. And if they can maintain some kind of a content release every 3 months. Because that's ultimately one of the things that hurt Destiny 1 a significant amount was that we just went too long sometimes between anything happening that was worth writing home about. And unfortunately for PC players, it feels like it's too soon for a content release since it's December 5th.
It's like the content release is December 5th?
The DLC comes out December 5th.
Yeah, I mean...
Which will include new zones, new raid.
I feel like, I don't know, that doesn't seem terrible to me.
No, I don't think it's terrible either because, you know, at this point we've explored a good chunk of the base game's content. I hope to have beaten the raid by then. I feel like we're making decent progress in the raid. I also feel like the raid is really interesting this time.
The raid is very interesting.
Look forward to see it.
I like that you only need 6 people, and it doesn't matter what those 6 people play. That alone endears me to the raid. It's like, oh, hey, there's 6 people online this evening. Let's go to the raid. Cool. I don't need these specific people doing these specific things.
I really like that it's loot locked, not... content locked.
Yep.
So like I can totally participate and do content that I've already seen for the sake of getting other people through it.
Or just because you want to do it again.
Yep. Also, can I talk about how much I love the clan system and shared Ingrams?
It's pretty amazing.
That part is great. Your friend did something cool. You get loot. Awesome.
Like it's not an insignificant part of why I want to get through the raid. Is because I know as soon as we can do it reliably, everyone in the clan is going to get cool stuff because of it. Like whether or not they ever set foot in the raid. But I also feel like these are the kind of fights that once we have them down pat, we can take like 4 people that know the fights with like 2 learners and pretty easily teach them the fights. Because like once it's mostly execution once you've figured out puzzles.
And figuring out the puzzles part is surprisingly fun you've heard me get on my soapbox about messaging, but they do a good job of messaging exactly enough to give you something to figure out without it just being we explain this fight to you or this fight is completely impenetrable without
like,
reading
it takes
a guide.
A trial and error, but there's enough like things happening and audio like an audio cue might play when a thing when something happens. It tells you, okay, that was something important, you know, or things moving around.
And you're not just you're not just hitting giant sacks of HP, which also feels good. I don't think anything that we've done has been you fight just one big thing with a bajillion HP.
I feel like one thing that they could have done better was the fact that the only players that really got to know what the Leviathan was and what the backstory of the raid was were the folks who bought the Collector's Edition.
Why is that? You get to find out.
Yep.
Because it just kind of showed up as like, oh, okay, there's a raid now.
There's a letter from Emperor Kallus that is in the Collector's Edition and some other details about the raid and who Emperor Kallus is and some backstory about what the Leviathan is.
So there's a little bit hinting towards it if you do the weapon quest. And I think there's like at least one side quest on Nessus that sort of points you in the direction of that, but it doesn't give a whole ton of backstory. At least it gives a little context.
I feel like somehow, and maybe I'm misunderstanding this, but I feel like somehow through playing the game, I know, and maybe tell me if this is wrong, but I know that Gaul didn't kill the Emperor. He just exiled him in a giant palace ship. And with Gaul dead, the Emperor is like, oh, hey, what's up?
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's the gist of it, that Emperor Kallus was too popular to kill.
Yeah, and
they would have martyred him.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Kallus at least thinks that he's a good, like, he's like kind of self, he's like kind of a giant narcissist, but he's also...
So Gaul's thing was to send his almighty to a world and consume the sun while conquering the planet and stealing its resources. Kallus's thing is to drive his ship that eats entire worlds to your world and hold it hostage while he makes you perform in a tournament of sorts. And the raid is us basically performing in his tournament.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Dance for his pleasure.
And either we basically have the choice at the end of either becoming his champion or watching our world die. And you learn that basically all of the different types of mobs that we encounter through the Cabal, the Legionnaires and the ones that kind of look like the Legionnaires are the only ones that are actually Cabal. The Scions were conscripted in this way. The Incinerator guys were inscripted in this way. Their dogs were found on another planet.
Hmm.
Aggressive recruitment tactics.
Got it.
Screw those dogs.
Seriously.
Hate those dogs.
Those dogs are awful.
This game has a lot of weird melee units that just rush you, and the dogs are definitely the worst one.
Because they're usually successful.
What's worse is the random yellow dogs that appear in the pack of the red bar dogs that are significantly worse than the others. I guess in part I kind of like the fact that so far the story beats have left off where the last game started. Like, we're fighting the Hive, but we're not fighting Oryx. We're fighting the Hive of Savathun, which absolutely fits into the original game.
Yeah, I get the impression that this happens after we won the original. Like, maybe that's not accurate, but...
That was my assumption, yeah.
But, like, the reason that... Because the impression that I got in the first game was that, like, everything was teetering on the edge of disaster. Just all the time, forever. But that here, it's... Like, it's really bad that the Cabal came in and wrecked everything, but it didn't mean that everything instantly became a disaster. It wasn't like, oh, this happened and now the darkness just wins.
Yeah, because basically the Fallen and the Hive had been greatly weakened by our actions from in the first game. I mean, that's part of why we were able to actually run around in the wilderness and be okay, I think, is that the Fallen have been reduced to just almost nothing.
Yeah.
Because in the first game, they basically controlled all of Earth apart from the tower and right around it.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember the intro to the first game. What little I was able to gather was the Fallen control this entire planet. If we don't get to safety fast, it's disaster for everybody.
Yeah, but didn't we, like, wander around Russia in the first game?
Yeah, the Cosmodrome area.
A bunch of Fallen.
But the Fallen were, like, also on all the other planets, too.
Yeah,
like there was a house that basically was on each planet. I guess one of the aspects that I really like about this game is the fact that we know what the city is, because like in the first game, you really don't get a good understanding of that thing we're looking down at as an actual city instead of just like a dead skybox. Yeah. In this game, we kind of get to see, oh yeah, it really was a city. Like, it was a vibrant city.
With ramen
you're not
chops.
Really just, you're not trapped to this tower.
Yeah. Yeah, the bits where you get to see the city at street level are really cool. I wish that was like a patrol zone. Like, clean up the cabal or whatever.
Like, that would be a great sequence of events of basically taking back the city or cleaning up the city and building outposts out of it and things like that. But I also kind of got the impression that the city really is still fairly a high-tech place. It's not just, you know, pure scavenging territory.
Yeah, I mean, it's not people huddled around fires made from, like, libraries just because they have to keep warm. It's like, no, this is actually the city. Not actually a terrible place to live, honestly, for the most part.
And also this time we can kind of visualize that there's an entire wall structure around the city that you couldn't actually see before.
Yeah.
Because it was very hard for me to visualize how, like, Twilight Gap and things like that fit into this thing that we're supposedly hovering over with the tower.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people that did not like the intro to this game.
Really?
As in... the not the first mission, but like the moments after Homecoming as you're making your way to the farm. I remember when it first came out on console, there were a lot of people that talked badly about that intro.
It is incredibly frustrating to have that section where you're pretty useless. But I mean, you are kind of useless then, so I don't know.
So it's great that it drives on the point that you're useless. On your second character, this is entirely pointless.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I feel like on my second character, I should be able to do the story optionally. Because that's really been the tedium in this game, is pushing three characters through the story. I mean, leveling to 20 has not been a challenge on any of my characters. Sitting down and grinding out the story has definitely been a thing I have slowly avoided.
See, I actually think that's really fun because, well, maybe I won't after the second and third, but it reminds me of a Halo story. And I loved playing Halo, and I love the story of Halo. I wish it had more vehicle sequences.
Well, I've got good news for you. Those are definitely, they definitely have those.
Well, yeah, it has a couple, but like... the original Halo had a lot of extended vehicle set pieces.
That's fair.
I was super excited when I saw I got to ride around in a Scorpion tank again.
I mean, part of me kind of hopes that they add a Crucible match type that has vehicles, kind of like they did in the previous one.
I thought people didn't like that one.
People didn't like it, but it was interesting. I mean, basically there is one game mode that nobody's playing right now anyway.
Is that competitive?
It's competitive.
I have grown to kind of enjoy competitive, but I think it is in relation to trying Trials of the Nine, which was one of the least fun experiences I have had playing a video game in recent memory.
It is just too long. Like, competitive is just way too long.
Yes. Competitive should be best of five, not first to six. Because, wow, that takes forever.
Well, that's the thing. With quick play, I know I am committing myself to, like, 8 to 10 minutes. With competitive, I'm committing myself anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it just takes too long.
So what is Trials of the Nine?
It is the hardcore PvP mode. You must go in with a group, and you have to be at least like level 260 to go into it. You know, mm-hmm. Even though it auto-balances, you must be that, must have that amount.
Yeah, it's one of those, you play matches until you win this many times or lose this many times.
You must win one to get anything. Only wins matter.
Yeah, and you're given a scorecard of, and you basically, you either get 7 wins or 3 losses. And the goal is to get 7 wins without getting 3 losses.
The rewards change if you're, like, do you get better rewards if you get your wins without any losses?
Yes, yes. If you get a perfect card, you get, like, an extra chest.
Mm.
So basically, you get, like, I don't remember, there's like 3 chests that you end up getting if you go perfect, in addition to the Ingram that all of your clan gets. I feel extremely lucky that I have a single Trials weapon, because the likelihood that I ever get any more Trials weapons is pretty nil.
Oh.
Yeah, I just don't... I don't know, maybe like Leandrin and Rusty and some of the people that are more PvP motivated will create a Trials team, but it is the most serious of serious PvPers for the most part. And what's greatly skewing things is the number of people from the console that re-rolled just so they could play the game in perfectly smooth 4K, 60 frames per second on the PC. At the very least, a lot of the Crucible streamers have started playing on PC.
Though I actually find that I have a surprisingly non-zero amount of fun in like basic quick play Crucible.
So long as you're not getting a full team, like a stacked team, it's pretty enjoyable. It's like a chill, you know, run and gun, shoot things type mode. But
when you don't, and it's not like the level at which they balance you is not high enough for you to just die every time, like you look around the corner and die.
Right.
Which was why I didn't like Trials of the Nine. That was not a fun time. But yeah, I like the raids. I like the strikes. I have a really fancy sparrow that I'm interested in trying out in something that, I don't know, uses sparrows.
Maybe they'll bring sparrow raising back.
Oh man, they are.
SRL is on the docket for the new year.
Yes.
Maybe they can keep it around for longer than just, you know, the holidays.
That is something I would have liked to have gotten to try in Destiny 1, but it had gone away by the time I played Destiny 1.
Yeah, they said they're bringing back the Dawning, so which is their New Year event. Because of timing, though, they're not going to do Festival of the Lost this year, which already should have happened before Halloween. So one general complaint I have about the game is I would have really liked us to have kept the farm as a useful space.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad that it, like, initially I thought it was just completely replaced and I couldn't go back there. But then a quest sent me there and I realized that, oh, okay, it's a separate spot on the Earth map now.
I guess what makes it sadder is the fact that, like, just a couple Warjacks and Tyra Karn are, like, the only thing that are there.
Yeah, everybody else moved.
I mean, Tyra Karn's the best Cryptarch, so sometimes I do pay her a visit when I've got things to decode. Players in Destiny 1 developed a lot of superstitions about which Cryptarch to go to, and an Astra Rahul would totally eat your stuff sometimes. The worst one, though, was, I forget his name, it was at the Reef. He literally was bugged. You'd get these faction consumables. Like, sometimes when you're killing Vex, you'd get a thing that you could turn in and get some glimmer. And if you went to him and you had, like, a stack of, say, 10, he would consume the entire stack but only give you rewards for one.
Oh, yuck.
And he was bugged the entire time. So, like, we never used that one. That was the Cryptarch no one used. But Tyra became my favorite during Rise of Iron. Mostly because we were in what was it even called? The Rise of Iron area. I forget the name. I feel bad that I forgot the name. Iron Temple, I think.
I went up there, but I never finished that story arc, so
it's a really short story arc.
At some point,
I would still, at some point, like to do some Destiny 1 retro raiding.
Yeah,
just because their raids were super interesting too. It's just there's a lot more asked of you to get to the point to where you can do those raids, as opposed to, I feel like 270 is a reasonable barrier for the Leviathan raid.
Yeah,
like it feels like it's easier to get to 270 than it was to get to the level cap in Destiny 1.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the content is accessible, and yeah, like accessible content, and also that's the word I'm looking for. I haven't done anything that's felt super grindy other than leveling my third character, where I did the thing that Bell recommended and got to Titan and leveled to 20 on Titan. And I don't know why I did that thing.
Because by the time you finish the story, you're already at the gear cap.
Yeah, but I was that even without doing all of that.
I did that thing, and I'm pretty sure I'm not already at the gear cap.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of story equipment that you get that has a cap on how good it is, as it turns out. Like the legendary, you get a legendary sword at the end of the story, and that legendary sword has caps out at 210, no matter what your actual light level is.
Right. There were fixed points like that in Destiny 1 as well, where things would only ever be a certain light level. I feel like power as a whole makes more sense than light level, but it will never not be light level to me.
I mean, I just mentally it's just eye level in my head, and I know what eye levels are.
I feel like the level process, like actually having levels, is completely extraneous in this game, because the real level is your gear level. Like that's the only level that's ever made any sense in this game. And I'm not really sure, other than gating you off of specific planets, I don't know, like this is one of those situations where there is a level system, but it's not the one that they claim it is.
It's almost like, never mind. I'm not going to get on that soapbox again.
Yeah, I love gear progression. I am just not as married to levels as I am to gear progression. But it sounds especially weird because, like, our actual level is going up with the December 5th content. It's going up to 25.
Wait, what? Why?
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Like, I'm not sure why that's a thing. Like, I could see the light level cap going up. That makes sense. That's reasonable. Why does the level cap need, or the actual structural level cap need to go up?
What does that even accomplish?
I don't know.
I have no idea what that other than gating some content.
I think that's exactly what they're using it as, is a gating mechanism.
From people who haven't bought the expansion. You can get this far, but no further if you haven't paid for it.
Weird.
I mean, I feel like having a bit on your account that says I've paid for this expansion is just as meaningful of a gating mechanism as what is even more arbitrary of a number.
But it lets me feel better than my friend who didn't buy the thing because my numbers can get higher than theirs. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just weird. So I'm curious to see how that all shakes out.
It's not like leveling is difficult or time-consuming in this game, though.
No, it's really not.
Are tokens, out of curiosity, are tokens and reputation linked across all characters?
Yes. Well, not the reputation. The token is. Reputations are per character.
So you should probably do all of your token turn-ins on whatever your highest level character is.
It is exactly what I do. Because that way you're going to get the best rewards. The only thing that I do differently is, like, if for some reason I want a specific gear set. Because gear sets have a planet that they natively drop on. And so, for example, I am trying to get the Jin Sim Knight set from Io for my hunter. So I will save those tokens and flip over to my hunter and open packages on the planet, hoping I get, you know, pieces of that gear set.
Gotcha.
Because each gear set has a specific stat package.
I definitely am not paying that much attention.
Well, you have restorative, mobile, and heavy gear.
Oh, I just mean putting together particular gear sets to accomplish some
goal.
I have the gloves that make me punch things harder.
Mostly, on all my characters, I am looking to have a tiny, tiny bit of mobility and fairly even restoration and resilience. So I am looking for armor that lets me do that thing. I feel like we've sort of just talked all around Destiny 2 without much direction.
Yeah, I mean, mostly it improves on the first game in some ways.
Yep.
A lot of ways.
It remains a game where you shoot a whole bunch of different aliens at the behest of a giant ping pong ball.
Yep.
And that's okay.
The thing that I was missing was context. And when I say I really love the intro, I really love that first interaction between Gaul and his, like, who's sort of presented as his lieutenant. And it's like, this is a pair of characters who are clearly good friends, who are still the antagonist, but he treats his friend well.
Yeah.
And honestly, I got to admit, his friend makes some salient points. You know, we worship this giant ping pong ball as a god. Maybe it's just a big machine. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
That said, somebody should probably tell Gaul that the Traveler is just not that into him.
Well, yeah, and Gaul becomes obsessed with the Traveler, and, like, it's ultimately destructive to him and his friend.
Yeah.
But, like, character was there. I understood what was going on. I felt morally confused. Like, I hated the bad guys, but I also understood their motivations.
Yeah. Hey, these people unlocked the secret to immortality. Why do they deserve it and nobody else does? Nobody can answer that.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, even we can't answer that. The speaker, at best, has kind of cultish reasoning.
I mean, let's be honest, he makes shit up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's his exact comment is, I speak for the Traveler. I never said that the Traveler spoke to me.
Yeah, like,
he just
he's a priest.
Let us assume that.
Which is weird, because basically that's what Osiris said before he, I don't know, like, before the events that led to him no longer being around.
What, that maybe the Traveler isn't a god?
No, that maybe the speaker doesn't actually speak for the Traveler.
Heresy, which turns out to be accurate.
Yeah, which is 100% accurate.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, I like the presentation of Guardians. Like, okay, yes, we are Guardians. We fight for what we think is right, and we portray it as the battle between light and the darkness, but we don't have a lot of proof that that's the case.
I mean, to be completely fair, of the four enemy factions, no, actually, 4 out of 4 of them are actively trying to kill humans.
I mean, yep. Yes. Though, in fairness, humans are also trying to kill them.
It's true.
But, like, at least 2 of the 4 of them are incapable of diplomacy.
I would...
Well, I guess we're up to 5 enemy
one
factions
of the 4
now. And,
In theory, diplomacy could happen with the robots. Maybe somehow if we forgot how to speak to
I'm
the
talking,
Pride.
I'm talking Hive and Taken are the two that you're not going to do any
diplomacy
with.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
really thinking about the Taken. You're right. Yeah. And
they're more disease than mob.
Yes. I mean, they're basically 2 branches of the same awful things from beyond.
I like the Hive. They feel like the most distinct of all of the enemies to me.
I also don't really understand the motivation of the Hive.
They're hungry.
I don't know if anybody does.
Okay, so you had
weird
to
have, rituals.
You had to have read the Books of Sorrows to understand the motivation of the Hive.
So
I'm
Bella's
serious, like,
the only person in the universe who knows the motivation of the Hive.
No, like Books of Sorrows is like literally a mini book that was unlocked by getting 50 calcified fragments on the Dreadnought. And it tells a story of, like, this weak race that, like, lived only a couple of months. Like, their entire lifespan was a couple of months. And they were on this giant water world called the Fundament. And they were basically preyed upon by every other race. And they found these worm gods. And the worm gods demanded a sacrifice. And they gave them power. And the worms basically demand slaughter. And if at any point they don't kill, the worm consumes the host. So the Hive are just driven by slaughter to survive. They have to constantly be conquering and constantly be killing, or the worms that they're, you know, raising and empowering themselves with will consume them, and they'll just be those husks that you occasionally find in the Destiny 1 zones. And that's why they kind of explode into, like, dust when you kill them, is the worm consumes them. But again, all of this doesn't exist in the game yet. I have a feeling it will, like, because I know exactly who our antagonist is for, you know, whenever we encounter the Hive again, because it was all from the Books of Sorrow. There were 3 sisters. There was Oryx, there was Savathun, and there was Shivu Arath. I think it's Shivu Arath. And they each basically had their own brood in their own Hive throne world. And they all had slightly different motivations. And Savathun is the trickster.
Lore item.
So they're just trying to stay alive through constant slaughter.
basically.
They made a real bad deal.
They're the bad ideas race.
They made a bad bargain. And sure enough, it gave them power and it allowed them to defeat the other races of the Fundament and functionally allow their people to survive, but at a cost of now they are constantly on the hunt and constantly slaughtering.
Yeah, they gave up. Basically, they are the, they made a bad deal and now they are the galaxy's worst monsters.
Yeah, probably no diplomacy with them.
No. Not without killing their worms.
Right, or finding a way to at least get them out of them. Yeah.
But yeah, that like doesn't improve their lot in life.
But because the worm gods lived on this giant ocean world, it makes me think that the thing that we see swimming in Titan is a worm god.
Oh, the giant thing below.
Yeah.
I had not noticed a giant thing below.
Yeah, there's a point where you can scan a thing and it's like some scanner and there's just something massive directly below, way down deep water.
Right, it's in the mission where you're in the arcology and you drop down to get the CPU core. And if you turn around, you can see like windows facing out into the ocean. Like it's underwater at that point. And if you stay there long enough, this giant worm-like shape swims past with little fuzzy tentacle things. But like it pretty much looks exactly like one of the worms from that you find all over the Dreadnought.
I think for this game, for these types of games especially, I kind of want to know why I'm shooting at people.
Yeah.
And that may be the problem, is like at this point they haven't brought in a lot of the reasons why you would be shooting about at all the various things.
I feel
they
like
just focused on the Cabal.
Yeah. Though I feel like I have enough context for most of them.
I definitely really enjoyed the story with the Cabal, and it shows me they can tell a good story, and that makes me really excited.
Yeah, agreed.
I feel like we kind of rolled back several layers of game in the release of Destiny 2. Like, I have this theory that it was in development before the release of Taken King, and as a result, there's like a lot of things system-wise that went into Taken King and Rise of Iron that didn't quite make it into Destiny 2.
Like private matches,
yeah. But I feel like if you take it in context against year one Destiny 1, it is a much better place. Like it is so much better of a base than Destiny 1 was.
Having played through all of the Destiny 1 content, I feel like the Destiny 2 content, what is available in the game, the Destiny 2 content is dramatically superior. Because I have, because of what Kodra was saying, like I have context. I know who these people I'm shooting are. For the most part, I know why I'm shooting them. I have an understanding of both my organization and my organization's motivations, and to some extent the motivations of the people I'm fighting and why they're incompatible. And like that gives me enough of a hook to want to go and find and explore and find all of the scannable things to get more context, because I have enough context to be interested. Like they gave me enough of a taste that now I want to go and find all the other stuff. And it's cool because there are tons of these scannable things around.
I just really want a journal to collect all the things I've scanned in.
Yeah. I also love, I wish there were more of them, but I love when an item has a lore page, because those give me, like, part of the reason that one of the big reasons why I love Failsafe and that whole thing is because I found so many little lore tidbits talking about the Exodus Black and that whole thing, and like I understand why Failsafe is so attached to her crew.
Well, I love also the bonus quest series. Like, they give you even more context.
Yeah, and like I also understand why Failsafe is nuts. Like, yeah.
I'm also highly amused by the lore entries on the weapons themselves in some cases.
Yes.
Even though they don't always at all like give any actual lore. Some of them are just flavor text.
But delightful flavor text.
Like, Lucky Pants and Graviton Lance are both make references to Guardians cheating or doing otherwise dishonorable things in the Crucible. And then Sunbracers is an explanation of why they renamed the item.
Yeah, Sunshot, despite being one of the most descriptive names I found in the game, I think that it's really funny that the Sunshot lore entry is about somebody who's bad at naming things or isn't very creative. I'm like, that's pretty funny. She's like, I'm a Titan. My job is to punch things. It's not to name them. You need a name for this? Whatever. It shoots solar energy. Therefore, it's the Sunshot.
I think one of the things that gives me the most hope is I was kind of a rabid fan of Destiny from Taken King onwards. I mean, I got back in a little bit ahead of Taken King, but I never really truly stopped playing from that point on. And I watched how the live team greatly improved that game. So I am super excited to see what happens with Destiny 2 as the game progresses over the next year or so.
I do kind of want to find out what is up with the creepy bees from Secret World guns.
Bees from Secret World guns?
I found a gun that has flavor text that I swear was written by the bees from Secret World. It like has the same cadence and kind of like ballistic approach to language.
That's one way to put it, I guess.
Like, you know what I mean when I talk about what the bee, like the things that the bees say in the Secret World, where they're like, I don't have the right words to describe that. But there are guns with that same thing going on, and I have no idea what the deal is with that.
Like what gun?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I realize you have a problem with the names of the guns, but like, what type of gun was it?
It was a pulse rifle, I want to say.
Might have been Vigilance Wing.
I don't know. It had the three symbols that I don't know. I've seen in a bunch of places, but I don't know what they represent. They're like three circles with stuff inside.
Ah, I know exactly what type of weapon you're talking about. Those are the Trials weapons, and they are from the Nine, which is an enigmatic group that we know next to nothing about, other than the fact that Xur represents them but does not have free will, and that the person who is currently officiating the Trials of the Nine does have free will but is not the Nine themselves. Like, it's kind of one of those things that, like, no, people speculate about what the Nine are, but nobody really knows. But they do talk like the bees. Okay. They absolutely talk like the bees. They're non-human intelligences, basically. That's kind of how they come across as.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I would kind of imagine that, like, they're the equivalent of the old gods.
I mean, Xur has plenty of face tentacles to go around.
He doesn't seem bothered by that terribly much, though.
He has no free will of his own.
That's fair.
He's not allowed to be bothered.
Because he's also got, I mean, I guess if you just have face tentacles, you get used to them.
It's his thing. I mean, they're not like actual tentacles. They're like shadowy tentacles.
Yeah, I don't get the impression that Xur is leading a terribly fulfilling life. Show up in caves to hand out guns to people who, I don't know, collected some legendary shards?
Yeah, he's not even allowed to ask us for coins anymore.
Yeah.
It's just bits of broken weapons now.
The room that you go into if you get flawless with Trials of the Nine is extra creepy.
I'll have to YouTube that because I'm sure as hell never going to see it.
Yeah, me either. Like, I YouTubed it, but yeah. Like, there's some weird stuff going on. And knowing Bungie, there's probably an absolute reason for every little bit of it. But, because so far, like, things have synced up with hints and of things from the past. Like, the fact that, you know, we're going to see Savathun at some point. But yeah, it will be interesting to see if they actually ever tell us what the Nine are. Or even if we'll ever see the Ahamkara. Which were...
We'll see some space dragons. Although I guess...
Yeah, like we supposedly...
Guardians hunted them to extinction, right?
Right, we supposedly hunted them to extinction. But they were also, like, intelligent wish dragon beings. So, yeah, like, who knows if they're still around. They were probably also not things that we should have done bargains with either.
I mean, that's a pretty long list.
Also, what the hell's up with the triangle ships at the edge of, you know, the space? I'm sure they're going to factor in at some point.
I mean, that one's a given.
Anyway, I feel like we could meander down this path all night. Or at least I could. I feel so sorry for Grace because she has had to listen to my insane ramblings for years now.
But at I'm much more into this game than I was the original, and there's enough lore in this game that I at least can vaguely understand your insane rambling. That's definitely an improvement.
Yeah, I can follow what you're talking about now, at least from what context clues I've been able to get. Like, I don't mind when a game isn't totally explicit about its story.
So long as it actually has one.
So long as there's enough of it there for me to get the hook. Because I need the hook.
Yeah, and I think mostly I was just so confused by what was going on in Destiny 1 that I felt like I desperately needed to know what was going on. So I started digging, and you have to dig a lot to find out what's going on.
I think part of it is I am very familiar with the experience of writing what seems like total confusing nonsense and passing it off as this is genius and you don't get it. And I have zero patience for that anymore.
I feel like this may be Morrowind inspired.
It might be Morrowind inspired.
I feel like we're going to object to that description.
I mean, Morrowind has incredibly good writing.
Sure.
It also has a bunch of other writing.
It has a bunch of other writing. I was going to say, I'm not going to object to the fact that Morrowind has some nonsense. Because there's the 36 Trials of Vivec in that game. I want to say it's the 36 Trials of Vivec. And that is 36 separate sets of text that are all completely nonsense. And I have no interest in those.
Really, really want you to think that they're genius and not nonsense.
Yeah, and I think the thing that hooked me with Destiny was, like, at face value, it all seemed like unintelligible nonsense. But then it all kind of started linking up and making sense. And I didn't know if I was going insane or if it really did make sense.
From what I can tell, it does make sense. And I think that's great. Like, I think that kind of storytelling is really good as long as it does make sense somewhere along the line. It's just that it's so easy to never bother to make it make any sense.
I feel like Destiny 1 is a tale of a game that wanted to tell a really big story, but then was constrained by a whole bunch of weird factors that happened along the way.
Yeah.
And a lot of last-minute rewrites. And I feel like Destiny 2 is them attempting to restart and tell the story they wanted to last time, or at least come at it in a way that's going to make sense in the long run. And I am so phenomenally happy that I have this on PC. I cannot tell you how much better the experience is on PC than it ever was on console.
The PC experience is really great. Like, I'm a really big fan. And I feel like a lot of what kept me from getting into Destiny 1 from a this is a fun game to play standpoint was that I just could not get into controlling this kind of game with a controller. Like, it just, I could not make it work.
I guess for me, PC gaming just fits my lifestyle better. I am set up to do that on either laptop or desktop, and I only have one spot that I have my console hooked up to, and remote play options never really worked that well. And there was an adjustment period, but now that I'm used to it, it feels better with a mouse and keyboard than it did with a controller. And I like the fact that, like, if for whatever reason I want to control it with a controller, all I have to do is pick up the controller, fire the trigger, and it's in controller mode. And if I want to go back to the keyboard, all I have to do is click the mouse button, and it's back into keyboard mode.
That's nice. If the current raid is indicative of how they approach raid design, I am sold. This is one of the most interesting raids I have played in a game in a very long time.
So I will say, like, based on my experience with how they approached content in Destiny 1, they did tend to lean towards what I would call a puzzle boss encounter.
I think it
was a lot of execution, but it was also a lot of figuring out a thing that you needed to do to be able to beat the boss.
Yeah.
Like, the boss by itself was unbeatable until you did some stuff.
Yeah, until you figure out what makes sense. And they do message enough that a completely obtuse seeming structure does make sense and does work. And that's a great feeling. It's like, it makes me think of BRD, except more functional, I want to say. Like, it's BRD, except it's fun from start to finish, as opposed to a kind of insane grind. That was also interesting and varied, but also an insane grind.
Well, and the raids tend to be like really massive and have a lot of extraneous areas that you may or may not ever need to go to.
The amount of completely unnecessary level design is frankly insanity to me.
The Dreadnought was that way as well. Like, there were tons of little areas that were hidden off, and like they'd hide a chest out there, and you'd have to figure out how to get to it, and it was not the normal flow of the raid.
I mean, we spent, what, an hour more just wandering around the completely unnecessary bowels of this ship? Just because.
And
we
the
could.
Thing is, like, right now, they seem unnecessary, but chances are a lot of those little areas have a purpose that we just don't know yet.
Yeah.
Because supposedly, I've heard that you can get to every single area of the ship through there. Like, all of the encounters are somehow accessible through the underbelly. And it's basically like some shortcut that keeps lets you not do the banner thing between encounters. I mean, this is the game that did the insane logic gate puzzle as part of that one weapon quest in Rise of Iron that involved jumping on pillars in a sequence gained from like numbers that you have to decode off of monitors elsewhere in the level that changed every time you were in there.
Awesome.
So unlike that lever puzzle that is like one thing, it changes every time you go in. But I'm kind of glad they learned that was probably overkill. That there should maybe be like one solution that you just, once you learn it, you can keep going and doing it. Because like the time I went to the Wrath of the Machine raid, they were doing that for me so I could start that weapon quest. And that was a good hour and a half of the raid, was knocking out that puzzle. I mean, I realize this is daylight savings time night and we're going to get back an hour, but we should probably wrap things up considering we've been recording for a while.
Probably.
Final thoughts?
It's a fun game.
I'm a fan. I'm a much bigger fan than I expected to be.
If you liked Destiny, you will like this. If you didn't like Destiny, then it's not that different, but it is improved. And I like Destiny, so I love this.
You might like this, depending on what your issues with Destiny 1 were.
Yep.
It's true.
I mean, I was honestly sort of bracing myself for Tam not to like it. Because, like, I wasn't sure. Like, I didn't know if this would be too Destiny.
I knew I was going to try it, but yeah, I don't know if I was going to actually like it. But I was willing to give it a shot. And I'm glad I did, because it's good.
Any other final thoughts?
I think we're set.
Cool. Well, next week we will record a normal show, because I'm sure we have other things to talk about. I'm hoping to have actually played Super Mario Odyssey by then.
I hope to have some things to say about the new Colossus by then.
It's true. That's another game I want to play, hopefully, by then. Anyway, hopefully you enjoyed the show, and we would love to hear your thoughts on Destiny 2, if you have played, and if you are enjoying it, or if you don't like it at all. Anyway, we will see you next week. Good night.
Good night.
See you.
Good night.
Good night.